Lowe's knows to bring your vision to life, it's important to find the right color. That's why My Lowe's Rewards members get a free Valspar paint or exterior stain sample to test your look to confidently refresh your space. Offer valid in-store only 87 to 820. Limit one per customer while supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See associate for details. Rewards program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hello and welcome to the Full of Beans podcast, hosted by myself, Hannah, a registered associate nutritionist and your favourite crazy bean. Full of Beans is on a mission to reduce eating disorder stigma and increase eating disorder awareness. Together, we will establish inspiring conversations with a range of individuals, including those with personal experience and their loved ones, as well as clinicians, researchers, and charities who are all working to increase the understanding of eating disorders. Using my personal battle with atypical anorexia and body dysmorphia, as well as my master's in eating disorders and clinical nutrition, we will together explore the experiences of like-minded individuals who are equally as passionate about sharing their stories to increase the understanding of eating disorders. Please note that this podcast discusses sensitive topics and should not be seen as a replacement for evidence-based therapy or treatment.
Today, I am joined by Sarah Barron, a PhD student at Cambridge University. I met Sarah through competing as a powerlifter, and Sarah has also competed in swimming and bodybuilding since a young age. Sarah joins us today to share her experience of weight categorized sports, her recent ADHD diagnosis, and how all of these aspects have impacted her experience of having an eating disorder. Hello, Sarah.
Hi, Anna.
How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Yeah, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. It's nice to finally be doing this. I feel like we've had this planned for so long.
Yeah, it's doing great though. I've been listening to your podcast and it's fantastic. So yeah, congrats on that and I'm glad to be here.
Thank you very much. It's lovely to have you. So just to start us off today, I know like we've spoken before about both of our experience of eating disorders, but just for the listeners, I wondered if you wanted to give kind of an overview of your experience of how your eating disorder developed and sort of where it went from there.
Yeah, so my eating disorder, I experienced it around the age of 15 or 16. And I suppose obviously it's very multifactorial and it's very individual for everyone. But I suppose the main trigger that I can kind of put it down to was that I had an injury. So from a very young age, from like 7 until 15, I was a swimmer. So I swam, you know, sometimes twice a day and it was just my thing and I loved it. And I had an injury to my knee and I had to have surgery. It was very, very imminent. I had to have surgery straight away. And I had to stop doing all kinds of sports, all kinds of activities, and kind of like learn how to use one of my legs again, essentially. Wow. So I think for me, that was like the biggest trigger. And for me, it wasn't just losing my exercise. It was kind of losing my sport as my identity and kind of my purpose and my way to also manage kind of difficulties mentally. So to have all of that just suddenly taken away, I think I just had a massive loss. And that's sort of what triggered it.
Yeah. And I think unfortunately that's so common, isn't it? I think we often can kind of identify ourselves as one thing. And interestingly, we spoke about this on last week's podcast as well, in that it's so important that you have so many things that make up yourself, you know, not just your, let's say, your sport that you do, or I think some people would be their job or whatever. It's so easy to get entangled into, okay, this is my thing that I do and that's the only thing I do. But then when, like you say, when it's then lost, it can be really difficult. So I guess, like, you know, when you had to stop the swimming because of the injury, is that when the eating disorder sort of took hold?
It was sort of in kind of after the surgery and the rehab, and you know, things were going very slowly, and I was like in hospital for a bit as well. It sort of stemmed from there, and I think from that point, you know, you experience something quite difficult and all the other things that you've kind of leaned on also are taken away from you. And I think in school, you're never really taught how to manage stress or really deal with difficult emotions. And I think the eating disorder kind of manifested through an inability to communicate that with the world. And I think often people think that when you develop an eating disorder, you kind of feel very out of control and it's a way to control things. But actually for myself, it's kind of the opposite. Like before I had my eating disorder, I felt really in control. You know, I had good grades, I had good friends, I had this sport. And then all of a sudden that was taken away, and the eating disorder actually provided me with comfort and safety that I couldn't find anywhere else at that time. And then actually as the eating disorder progressed was when I felt the most out of control. You know, I wasn't in the driving seat anymore, and the eating disorder took over my whole life. So for me, it was kind of the opposite to maybe what people might traditionally think.
Yeah, I think the addressing the topic of control is a really important one. And I think we've had quite a lot of conversations on the podcast about, often people say eating disorders it develops because you want control. And I think for some people, it is the complete opposite. Like, I mean, I think for most people, they think, you know, that the idea stems because they think it will provide them control. Actually, it's always that the eating disorder is in control and you're completely out of control. But for some people, it's not even about the sense of control. It's about so many other things. I just wanted to ask as well, and this might be, you know, I'm going to start with a big question at the start of the podcast, but you said about, I said to you, like, oh, when did your eating disorder start? And you said, like, for you, you can think back and to the trigger was the knee operation, and I know we'll probably come on to sort of the characteristics of eating disorders later when we're talking about sport. But do you think that, how do I say this, do you think that regardless of what happened to you, you were already predisposed to have an eating disorder and therefore another event might have happened and you'd have got it? Or do you put it down to, you know, I had the injury, I couldn't then train, and that's why my eating sort of happened?
That's a really good question. I think, yeah, I mean, obviously you don't just wake up one day and you have an eating disorder. I don't think there's ever, I say it was like the main trigger that I can pinpoint it to, but I definitely say that it's not the only thing that caused it. It's very multifactorial. And yeah, I think it's a trigger, right? It's a catalyst. So
yeah,
this thing happened, but then it kind of like unleashed a massive storm of like difficult experiences, and like kind of rather than exploding, I kind of imploded, and all of these difficult things that I've experienced in the past and maybe stresses I was going through at the time, I kind of took that out on myself because I didn't really know how else to deal with it. And I definitely think that later on down the line, you know, if I hadn't have gone through it then and kind of increased my self-awareness and understanding of my personality and maybe difficulties I've had in the past, that, you know, like it probably would have happened at some point. And now in a way I'm kind of grateful it happened, because now I know how I act in situations. I know my personality, I know myself very well, and now when something difficult comes up, I know my coping strategies, I know how I can deal with things much better now. And so I think a lot of people say, you know, it's, these things are always, you know, they're so horrible and I wouldn't wish anyone to go through them. But then when you come out the other side, you know, people always think you come out of it with so much more self-awareness and you can kind of put a positive spin on it. Yeah,
I genuinely couldn't agree more. Like you say, I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy. But like you said, I think it has it does make you a stronger person. You, like you say, become so much more kind of self-aware and stuff. I just wanted to kind of go back to, I guess, your story and with your swimming and stuff like that. So you said that, you know, that provided you sort of, that was your identity and kind of, you know, that when that was then gone, that was when you struggled. So how long a time was there between the swimming? Was the bodybuilding something that came in order to kind of be another identity for you?
Yeah, so I mean, the bodybuilding came in a way as I was kind of restoring my weight after I was quite ill. You know, I wanted to put on weight and I was like interested in learning about nutrition a bit more and kind of healthy ways to exercise. And initially it was a way for me to, yeah, I guess get healthier and channel some of that energy into something a bit more positive. So rather than destroying myself, I was trying to then improve myself. So yeah, it stemmed from that. And I don't remember the next part of your question.
No, I was just basically asking, did the bodybuilding provide you another sense of identity? Do you think that's why you started?
Yeah, I think in a way it did provide me with some sort of identity, but also because I suppose sport was the only thing I knew. So yeah, I guess it is identity. It was like who I was, and I love sport, I love training. But then there's always two sides to the coin, right? I think my eating disorder had a love-hate relationship with my sports, because on one hand, it was a way for me to be healthy. But then on the other hand, you know, there's lots of different ways that eating disorder thoughts can kind of creep into other areas of your life. And at the time I thought, you know, I was being super healthy, like I was eating really clean, in quote marks, clean, eating really clean, training really hard. But then in hindsight, you know, there's this term now, orthorexia, which isn't like an official diagnosis, but it's a term that I can really relate with, because, you know, you're kind of just channeling that disordered eating into something else, whether that be another sport or another diet or like another way of life. Yeah, so to answer your question, I think I probably was seeking another form of identity.
Mm-hmm. And do you think that I think it's quite common, I'm not saying it happens to everybody, but I think people can transition from the sort of, I don't think you've actually said this in the podcast, but I've spoken to you before and I know that you had anorexia, but I think it's quite common for people to go from the anorexia to then having the orthorexic tendencies, because like you say, it's almost a camouflage of, oh well, you know, I'm eating clean, quote unquote, because that's really good for me, or like, you know, I'm training because it's healthy to exercise or whatever. And it's very easy to mask those sort of behaviors because they are normalized in society. So do you think that's sort of what happened with you, was it was that transition?
I definitely think it was a transition period. I think you go through lots of different phases of transition. And as I was saying that, I was thinking of like evolution. I think you kind of like evolve out of your eating disorder. And so I think every time you kind of like evolve a little bit more, you become more self-aware and you can more quickly understand when you're falling into, you know, traps again. So I think as the years have gone on and as like I've kind of transitioned through sports as well, I've kind of realize when things are happening, realize when my thought patterns are transitioning, and kind of can stop it a bit more in its tracks. Yeah, it's interesting you actually mentioned, like, I don't have a problem with saying that I had anorexia, but I just realized that I never said that. I think in my mind I'm kind of always, I kind of like to generalize eating disorders a bit more, because I don't really want to put it into any sort of buckets, or I think sometimes that can be a bit unhelpful. So I suppose, yeah, I think it's sometimes a bit more useful to say just eating disorder in general.
Yeah, no, and not, I apologize for... Yeah.
No, it's fine.
No, I think it's a really good point. I think it is something that's done very often in the clinical setting, is that we do put somebody into a bucket and say, okay, so you've got anorexia, therefore you've got these characteristics and this is the treatment, or, you know, you've got binge eating disorder. But I sort of see it as eating disorders are a spectrum and you can sit anywhere. So it's sometimes, I think for some people, it can be helpful to have the diagnosis and the terminology, but for others actually, you know, where they necessarily sit on that spectrum is completely different to maybe where they've been put as their diagnosis.
Yeah, definitely.
So after your bodybuilding, you went into powerlifting, which is where we met very excitedly. And I don't know whether you've got the same opinion as me on this, so I'm quite interested to talk to you about it. But I wanted to ask about the impact of powerlifting and kind of the role that that played in your eating disorder recovery, whether you thought it was a positive or a negative one.
Again, I think it was a transition and like an evolution in my eating disorder. But I think, so again, it always stems from like, I don't know, I think you have quite an innocent mindset. And the same way in which when I transitioned from anorexia into bodybuilding, I was thinking, you know, I'm doing this really healthy thing, I'm putting on weight. But still then it was very restrictive and, you know, it was very focused on body image. When I looked into powerlifting, again, for me and like my innocent thought process was that, you know, this sport isn't about your body image. You know, you don't have to restrict a lot. It's going to be really good. Maybe I can put on some more weight and not have to worry about being super lean. And it was for a while, like I was putting on weight in a healthy way and I was in, like my health was improving. I was getting stronger and I loved that, you know, you could eat to fuel your sport. It wasn't about the how you looked or, you know, how lean you were. So that was, in that way, it was good for, I suppose, my body image. But then, again, other kind of negative tendencies start to creep in and like negative thoughts. And I guess for those of you who don't know, powerlifting is it's weight categorized. So, you know, you have to fit into a certain weight category. And I think then often people can then use that as an excuse to become restrictive again. So around a competition, maybe if you're sitting a little bit heavier than your weight category, you just have this kind of almost excuse. You're like, oh, I have to get my weight category. I have to fit into my weight category. Rather than going up to the one above, you want to go to the one below. And then you just start again with the restriction. And so I think, yeah, it can then snowball again into kind of a negative mindset, a negative spiral.
Yeah. And I mean, I agree with that wholeheartedly. I think it's, as you said, it is definitely a transition. And I would definitely agree that I used it as a transition for myself from having then eating disorder. It was then powerlifting. But I think you go from eating disorder to then disordered eating. And I, you know, I've got such vivid memories of like trying to cut my weight because I had to be a certain weight category. And I did really bizarre things. I really manipulated my water intake, my food intake. And I just look back and I think, okay, if I was a professional, maybe, but where I was sitting as you know, it was like a university competition, it maybe there wasn't the need. But like you said, because of those sort of characteristics of that determination and the competitiveness that comes along with having an eating disorder, that was then brought into the powerlifting. And I don't know about you, but one thing I really struggled with, which I definitely saw was brought over from my eating disorder, was comparing myself to everybody else. I would go to competitions and obviously, like, even if you're in the same weight category as somebody, everybody's weight and everyone's shape is different. And I would then spend the whole day of the competition thinking about how people looked or how I looked rather than the weight that I was lifting. And that should have been the focus. I was there to like hit PBs and everything, not to be thinking about how I looked.
Yeah, definitely. I definitely agree. And something you mentioned as well was about, you know, we're at a university level and we're not, I mean, you know, we're doing good things and we're improving ourselves, but we're not at the elite, you know, Olympic level, that kind of really elite level. And I think it just reminds me of, you know, basically the whole nutritional and like supplement industry is like, yeah, these things really make a difference if you're in that top 1-2%, you know, you're an Olympic athlete, it's going to make the difference. But then trickle down to the general population, like all of these, this whole market it's really not going to make that much of a difference to the average person. It's really about just getting, you know, the essentials, training, and getting, you know, the macronutrients that you need. It's, you don't really need all of this really. Yeah,
no, absolutely. And also, you know, I think I can't speak for other weight categorized sports of, you know, whether there's the same sort of, I feel like I've met a lot of people along the way that have started powerlifting and then, you know, it's come out later on that they used to have an eating disorder. So it is sort of like a mask again, similar with the orthorexia as we were talking about. But I don't think that we necessarily consider the physical effects that that's going to have, not necessarily a weight cut, because that's often a short-term one, you know, for a powerlifting competition. But I wondered, you know, if we could now talk about sort of the physical effects that you putting yourself through like a bodybuilding cut or just like generally restrictive diets overall, the impact that that's then had on you, like medically.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, because as you said, it's all very well if you're just doing this short-term. So, you know, 1 to 2 months in a bodybuilding competition, or even 3 months where you're cutting down your diet quite considerably, it's fine in the short term, but obviously it's not sustainable. And similarly with a powerlifting competition, you know, if you're spending, sometimes even people do it, you know, a few days out or a week out, they can manipulate their diet enough to get them into the weight category, and that's fine short term. But then on the flip side, it gets very dangerous if, you know, you have that mentality of I always want to be in this weight category, or I always want to be this lean. You never have that kind of off season or off period where you're actually growing and increasing in strength and size. If you're always thinking, I've got to be this weight, I've got to be this shape, I've got to be this lean, it's really damaging for your body. And I think it's a really difficult mindset to be in, because you don't even realize it. And yeah, it can be very, very dangerous for your body. And I mean, I don't know, do you want to talk about like the different physical symptoms I experienced?
Absolutely. Yeah, okay. If that's okay with you.
Yeah, sure. I mean, obviously, I mean, during anorexia, that has it's very damaging for your body. And I mean, I remember one of your podcasts before, you were talking about the unicorn syndrome, where, you know, you think you're invincible and, you know, almost like nothing bad's ever going to happen to you, because I don't know, you just don't believe it for some reason. You never, and it's the same with, you know, COVID now. I mean, people don't really realize how serious it is until they get it, or like if one of their family members get it and they're like, oh wow, this is a really big deal. And it's the same with eating disorders. Like, until you experience it or someone in your family experiences it, you don't really realize the full impact of it. So yeah, with anorexia, I mean, obviously amenorrhea, or losing your periods, that's really common. And the reason this can be dangerous for anyone, but especially women, is that you're not having the correct amount of hormones kind of circulating in your body. And for example, estrogen is really important for protecting your bone health. So another consequence can sometimes be that your bone density can decrease, and then you're at an increased risk of things like fractures and breaking your bones. Even, you know, just simply tripping up, you could break a bone, which isn't so good. In terms of my mood, like, I was just not a very nice person to be around, and I know many other people say this as well. Like, you barely have energy to survive, let alone be pleasant. So yeah, I mean, it takes a massive hit on your mood. I couldn't really sleep either, because, you know, if you're hungry, you struggle to sleep. And I think, I don't like to use the word regret, because as I said, like, these things happen for a reason. And I think, you know, now I've learned some really valuable lessons and made many, many different good friends. But at the time, I really wish, you know, when you're 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, in your 20s, like, it's supposed to be about partying and like making memories and having fun with your friends. And I think, you know, part of me looks back and thinks, like, I wish I just had that time to make memories, you know, hang out with my friends and like not have to struggle with this difficulty. And then I suppose that also leads on then to things, well, your mental health condition. So I was also diagnosed with anxiety and panic attacks, and then eventually depression as well, when I was kind of in the midst of it. But fortunately now my weight's restored and I've had some psychological support. Like most of those mental health conditions have pretty much disappeared. So I think it's really important to know that they're reversible, and the same with the physical side effects. Like all of these things are reversible, but it is very dangerous. So it's definitely not a place you want to be in at all.
No. And I think it's really good that you kind of touched on all the impacts of eating disorders there, and not just the medical. I mean, obviously the medical ones are very scary, but sometimes I think they can be like too scary, if that makes sense. But because they're so scary, like you said, people are then like, well, that just won't happen to me. And I think actually hearing your experience of, you know, I regret not being able to go to a party or stuff like that, I often think people can relate to that more. Obviously, like, I'm not saying let's, like, the medical things we need to talk about, because they're really important. But I think that missing out is, like you said, the medical and the psychological symptoms, if you get support early and you get that intervention, they can be reversed. But those memories, they can't be. You can't get them back. And I think so. I'm really glad that you brought that up as well.
Yeah, and it's definitely something I always think about now, because I mean, you know, there's never a perfect recovery, and you know, I still have my days when I struggle and still have disordered thoughts and things like that. But I always just come back to the thing, you know, if, like, God forbid, you know, I was in an accident or something, or even if, like, I did live a long, healthy life and I was, like, in my bed, you know, on my deathbed when I was, like, 90 or something, like, I would just hate to look back on my life and think, like, it was a waste, you know, I just spent all that time. Not that it's a choice, because it's not, it's a serious mental condition, but I would just hate to not have made all of those memories with all of my loved ones. You know, that's the thing. That's the thing that's always drive me. You know, if I couldn't do it for myself, if I couldn't manage to get better for myself, it was just this thought of having all of my loved ones suffering and, you know, losing my friends and family. Like, I didn't want that. So for me, that's a massive driver, just doing it for my loved ones and for making those memories.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, like you've said, it's not a choice, but I think, you know, recovery is something that we can engage in, and it does have to come from within to want to recover. But I think I would agree with you wholeheartedly that initially when I recovered, I experienced sort of those eating disorder thoughts, and every thought was telling me, do not recover, because it won't be better. So I had nothing inside me that actually wanted to get better. But in that time, I just thought, my mum and dad want me to be better. And if they want me to, I just have to trust that they kind of know what is the best for me, because they have done my whole life. So like you said, I think if you can find an external factor when everything internally is saying you really don't want to do that, then that is really important.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's strange, because when you're in that mindset, like you said, you kind of get very defensive, and you know, these people around you, like your parents, you know, your friends and family, like, they love you and they want you to get better. And I find it so, I don't know, just so backwards that you think that they could be trying to harm you. And I just try and remind myself now that, you know, if I ever have a bit of a moment, like, you know, these people are here because they love me. Yeah. You know, they're not doing anything to damage me. So, you know, you've got to take their word as fact if you can't sort of doubt yourself.
Yeah, I think that's something I've definitely been thinking of recently, in terms of, you know, sort of, I did a post on it the other day about, like, do I want to recover? And I just think, you know, if you are in the depth of an eating disorder right now, I'm going to assume that it's not making you happy. If somebody's giving you a light and saying that there could be an alternative option, just try it. Because ultimately, you know, if you're not in a position now where you're happy, then you could potentially be. And if you're not, when you recover, then you've done it before, so you can just slip back into it if you want to. And I know that's probably not a great way to think about it, but actually just trying to engage in recovery, you probably are going to be happier. But just in terms of, like, we already spoke a little bit about characteristics, and I think sometimes we can be kind of negative towards the characteristics that predispose us to an eating disorder. But I just wanted to ask you, like, do you think that sort of some of the characteristics that do mean that you are predisposed to have an eating disorder, do you think they helped you in your sport and in just general life, I guess?
Yeah, I definitely think so. I mean, you know, I think your personality traits do feed into the eating disorder, but then equally, they, in the right doses, they can have, you know, like a positive impact on your life. So I guess just like a few things which I've kind of identified in my personality. It's kind of like the all or nothing thinking, or like maybe perfectionism, if you wanted to put it in that way. But it's sort of like, you know, you give something 100% or nothing. And I think like in my sport, that really helped, because I would, you know, I'd be there at all hours of the day, you know, training early in the morning, late in the evening, and I would give it like 100% so that I'd leave nothing to chance. And, you know, it's just the same with every area of my life, really, you know, the same with studying. And again, with the eating disorder, when I was in that place, is, you know, that's kind of your everything and that's your identity. And that was kind of all I had at the time. And that was what I gave everything 100%. And as well, pushing your body beyond your limits. So, you know, when I was competing, you know, county, national level, you have to push beyond your limits, like completely. I mean, you think you finish, there's no more fuel in the tank, but you've got to keep pushing for that extra time, for that extra PB. And the same with powerlifting, you know, you have to believe and you have to be able to push beyond your mindset. And that's really important for sport, but not so much when you're in an eating disorder or like you're in a mental health condition, because pushing beyond your physical limits, you know, where is that going to lead? To the hospital? You know, it's not good, but it's good in a sense if you flip it to be ambitious, you want to achieve, you know, getting to where I am now in my PhD and everything like that. Like, it's good on one side, but in, you know, in the right amount of doses, in the right dose, sorry. Yeah.
No, I think I completely agree. I always say I don't think I'd have got this far with anything that I've done if I wasn't such a passionate person. But like you say, it's taking those characteristics and putting them into something positive. And you know, that's great, but you know, maybe eating disorders is not the positive that we need. And kind of going on from that, I don't know whether this is going to be the same characteristics or not, but I know recently you were diagnosed with ADHD. Do you think that, is that something that you think kind of those, the characteristics around that predisposed you to an eating disorder, or is it something that now you look back on and think, oh, that makes sense, as in things that happened because of your recent diagnosis?
So I've had a lot of I don't know. I don't want to say a midlife crisis because I'm only 25, but a quarter life crisis.
I like it.
Yeah. So a couple of months back, I was diagnosed with ADHD and dyslexia. And I think for me, like, as soon as, I mean, because you have these thoughts in your head, you know, like, as in my whole life, like, I felt like I'm not quite, something's not quite right. And it's more in the way that I process things, the way that I process information, and maybe just how I behave around people is just like not societally normal. But yeah, I think as soon as I got that diagnosis, I think I just suddenly, I felt like a weight had lifted off my shoulders. And even though I had kind of recovered from my eating disorder, I still had it as this identity, like it was still part of me. And I think once I had this diagnosis, I felt like I could let go of that eating disorder identity, because this made so much more sense to me. And it made so much more sense to my identity and how I've kind of related to the world. And I think definitely all of those characteristics and kind of personality traits I mentioned above, I think do link in with this diagnosis a lot. And I've had a lot of like time to reflect and still researching a lot about it. But definitely, so for example, things like not feeling like I fit in, or this kind of like core self-belief that I'm not good enough. I'm like, why can't I do these things? Like, I'm not good enough. I'm not worthy. Like, I'm struggling. now when I reflect on that, I think, yeah, this is actually really accurate in school. Like, I was struggling a lot, and I would have to do things multiple times, and it would take me longer to understand things than my peers. And it's funny because people always tell me, like, oh, you're so organized, or like, you're so quick at learning things, like, you can't have a problem. But actually, they didn't see what was going on behind the scenes. Like, when I went home to do my homework, I was working so hard all the time. And people don't see that side of it. So I was working hard, and obviously this perfectionist trait as well. Like, I wanted to do good, and I didn't want to let this thing that I was struggling with, like, pull me down. So I would work like twice as hard, you know, give it 100% or even more. And then eventually that just led to me burning out in kind of a most extreme way. But I think it all definitely links in. And I think some of the kind of coping mechanisms to deal with these difficulties, I mean, for example, anorexia and the eating disorder was a way for me to kind of channel that core self-belief that I just didn't have, basically. Yeah.
So do you think that I'm just trying to like understand what you said. So do you think that it's sort of like the ADHD characteristics that led you to have poor self-belief, and then you're sort of used anorexia to like navigate your way through that? Is that what you're saying?
I think definitely these kind of challenges I've had with dyslexia and ADHD have definitely been a contributing factor to developing an eating disorder. In my recovery and kind of the psychological therapy, we address the core beliefs for sure, like, you know, not feeling good enough, but I never really got to the bottom of why I believe that. There was never anything in my life that I could kind of, you know, stem it on, or that it made sense. But then now on reflection, like, now I've had this diagnosis, like, and especially going through the assessment, I don't know if anyone listening will have any idea what that's like, but it basically feels like you're back in school, you know, in like year 3 or 4, and you're doing all these spelling tests and like comprehension tests. And it just literally took me back to when I was in school at that age. And I was like really struggling, and it felt awful. I felt like I wanted to cry. And like, I felt all those core beliefs, like, I'm not good enough. Like, I can't do this. Like, why is everyone else able to do this and I can't do it? And so I think some of the core beliefs which led to my eating disorder, there's definitely an element of that which was from these difficulties I was having with ADHD and dyslexia.
And I don't know whether you'll know the answer to this, but you just said like you've done a lot of learning and stuff. Is it something that you've come across in research that is quite common to have that link?
Actually, I did a lecture on this to some students at Camborne College.
So, tell us all.
I think you can spin it, like everything that's like non-neurotypical, I think you can spin it on its head and think of them as superpowers. I like to think they're superpowers, because although you have these difficulties, you also have some other really cool stuff that you can do that no one else can. So for example, like hyper-focusing. People think ADHD is a problem, you can't focus on anything, like, but it's actually a problem that you can't regulate your focus. So you can't necessarily choose what you focus on. But, you know, if you get really focused on one particular subject, like maybe it's science or whatever, or maybe it's a problem you're trying to solve, like, you're so focused on that you can get really good at it. So I think you can spin them on their head and make it into a superpower. And I like to think that although they have been struggles or led to some struggles, they've also helped me a lot.
In what way do you think they've helped?
Can I just have some time to think?
Of course.
I did write some notes. I'm just looking at them.
It's absolutely fine, don't worry.
I don't really know how they felt. Let me think. Okay. So I think, again, always going back to the self-awareness thing. But for example, I mean, dyslexia is not just a problem with spelling, right? It's a problem with like processing language as a whole. So that's like speaking, writing, reading, like understanding what people are saying and trying to articulate your speech as well. So it's quite difficult. But my my visual memory and my visual learning is like incredible. So, you know, I noticed this reflecting on when I used to revise for exams and things, like I would always make them super colorful. I would draw, like words didn't really make sense to me, or listening to the lecture back didn't really help. But then if I drew it or made it colorful, like I could remember it so much easier. And so you can kind of, through that self-awareness, you can kind of use those skills to your advantage. So now, like, I know that I have a visual memory that's really good, and I can use that to my advantage. And another thing is, like, I know that I find organization and time management really, really difficult. So I can put things in place that will help me. And so taking that, I color coordinate everything. Like I have a planner, I have like a notebook, and I can use that in a way that helps me. So it's kind of like identifying where your struggles are and like how you can put in practices that will help you achieve, or even like achieve beyond what you thought you could. And to answer your question about like, if, you know, in science and research, if anyone struggles with these, it's actually, I wouldn't say common, but you know, like famous names like Albert Einstein, Darwin, like Thomas Edison, like all of these people now, you know, it's been shown that they had ADHD and or dyslexia. And sometimes even things like schizophrenia, or, you know, there's something like not quite neurotypical about these like amazing people. And it's not to say that whether you're neurotypical or non-neurotypical, it doesn't mean you're any better or worse. It just means that, you know, it's not a disadvantage. Like you can like harness your superpowers and like make it work for you. Yeah
And I suppose in some way, I guess, knowing that you're better at some stuff that you are than others, it's like you said, you can tailor things to meet kind of your best qualities, and then you can, like, the world's your oyster if you know that. So I personally think it's fantastic. And I wanted, kind of the question I meant to ask before was, is it known if there's a link between ADHD and eating disorders, or is that something that's they're unsure about, or do you know at
all? So it can, I've done a bit of research because I was interested in this as well. And I mean, generally, you know, it can be a way for people with ADHD to develop an eating disorder, but it can kind of go either way. So generally with kind of like the hyperactive impulsive side of ADHD, linking that to food, you can be quite sort of impulsive. And as well, if you find things like time management quite difficult, or if you're hyper-focused on something, you might like forget to eat or even forget to drink. And it's gone hours before you've even had anything. So then when you come to eat, you know, you're super hungry because you've forgotten to eat, and also impulsive. So you start to eat something that tastes really good, and then you don't really have those kind of like stop or control hunger mechanisms kind of quite balanced. So in that sense, things like, you know, binge eating or overeating could become a problem. But on the flip side, if you've kind of like been able to mask your symptoms, and that just means kind of developing mechanisms that make it less likely people will notice a difference, you could then have all this internal conflict and like feelings of loss of control and burning out and like trying to do too much because you're trying to keep up with everyone. And in that sense, then restriction could come in, and anorexia, because, you know, you're trying to control the situation, you're trying to navigate these difficult feelings and emotions, and kind of, you're quite stimulated, and then that could also link to things like anxiety. So I think it depends kind of which kind of symptoms you have with ADHD. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there are lots of different types. There's like the attentive type, there's a hyperactive side, there's the impulsive side. But I think it can definitely link in to eating disorders. And the medication also, if you choose to be medicated with ADHD, which is also a possibility, which can help you to focus. There's also side effects from the drugs. So again, things like appetite control, it can reduce your appetite, it can affect your digestive system. So that's another thing to consider. And potentially that could also then lead to an eating disorder if you're on this medication. So it's very individual and it depends on your symptoms and everything, but I think there could definitely be a link.
Yeah, absolutely. I think what you have just demonstrated there, unfortunately, is that eating disorders, like you said at the start, are completely multifactorial. And I don't think that we can sit here and pinpoint, okay, so you've got this, therefore you're going to get an eating disorder. If we could do that, what a great day that would be, because then we could just put prevention in for everybody that had that particular characteristic. So, you know, I think it's great that we're determining all these links and everything, but equally it just kind of adds to the difficulty of, well, there's just another thing that could, you know, potentially lead to an eating disorder, which I think that's why it's so great that we're having conversations and people like yourself are so open and honest about their experience. So thank you so much for sharing everything. I've got two questions that I want to ask you for the end. So the first one is, if somebody is listening and they resonate with what you're saying, or, you know, they're listening because they think, I think I am struggling with some form of disordered eating, what would be your top tip or your best advice for them to gain support?
I know it can be difficult for some people. You know, if you don't, you might not think you have anyone close, but I think the biggest thing you could do is just try and talk to someone. So, you know, whether that be reaching out to a friend or a loved one or GP or even someone like a personal trainer, just anyone you could find, or even online, there are online support emails and chat rooms, which Hannah will link you to. I think just talking and trying to reach out for support, because although it comes from yourself, recovery comes from yourself, like you can't do it alone, like you really do need support. So yeah, although you can do it, you can't do it alone. So I think reaching out is really important.
Yeah, and I really like the fact that you kind of expanded there on who you can reach out to, because I think, you know, not everybody does have somebody in their family or a friend that they feel comfortable talking to, but I think there will always be somebody that is there to listen to you. And like Sarah said, I will put the links to different services in the comments below. And then my other question is, obviously, it's fantastic that we're here talking about different people's experience. What do you think is the next step that we need to take in order to raise awareness about eating disorders? Because I think it's great having the conversation, but I still don't think we're reaching people that we're actually trying to reach, because the people listening to this podcast will be people that are already interested in raising awareness.
Yeah, that's so true. I think really it starts from, like, when we're younger. I mean, I always think back to my school days, and even in high school, you know, we just had no kind of support or education on how you can manage your stress, or even how to revise, or different ways to revise, or yeah, just different, even just mental health problems. Like, what is a mental health problem? How do you deal with emotions? Like, you know, all of this type of thing. I think really it would be fantastic if we could teach this as early as possible.
Yeah.
Even things like starting mindfulness or meditation, you know, kids who are like 5 or 6, they can just sit and listen to their breath and kind of tune into their body. And I think it's really important, you know, to start kind of at a younger age.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a great suggestion. And I think sometimes people are like, they're fearful of doing that because they think, oh, well, what if we give people a mental health problem? Well, I think being open and talking about it, people are a lot less likely to develop something in silence and not feel they can share it. So yeah, I think that's a great suggestion. Thank you so, so much for joining me. I've really enjoyed going through everything with you. I feel like I kind of know your life story now. It's fantastic. So yeah, thank you for being so open and honest, and hopefully people listening will really be able to resonate with you.
No problem. It was a pleasure.
I enjoyed that conversation so much with Sarah, and I loved her positivity regarding how she had been through difficult times with her eating disorder. And, you know, there was a transition from her eating disorder to bodybuilding, orthorexia, powerlifting. But now she just uses the quality that she's developed, and it's made her a stronger person. And I think having that sort of mentality is really special. Next week, we'll be joined by Pippa Richardson, who is an embodiment teacher and writer. She is the creator of the Girlness Project and the yoga and body awareness therapist at Ori. With Pippa, we discuss sex, intimacy, connection, somatic therapy, your parasympathetic, your sympathetic nervous system. Honestly, it's jam-packed full of incredible information, and I'm so excited for you to listen.
But I think kind of involving the partner feels really important, and just reassuring everyone that we can still find ways to make contact and create intimacy. It might be that sexual intimacy isn't a priority. And if you're someone who's on the opposite end of the spectrum and engaging in kind of promiscuous sexual activity, then we need to think about, you know, what's the impulse underneath that? What is driving this behaviour? What's underneath it?
If you enjoyed listening today, you won't want to miss next week's episode, so be sure to subscribe to be one of the first to hear it. Please also like, comment and share this podcast with anyone you feel that may need support at the moment. Not only those struggling with eating disorders, but also their loved ones, as this can be a very difficult time for everyone. Eating disorders are crippling illnesses, and this podcast aims to motivate and inspire individuals along their path of recovery. If you are struggling with an eating disorder, charities like Beat, Seed and First Steps have great resources. Please also reach out to your local GP to see how you can gain support for your eating disorder. See you next time. Bye.